Hi, everybody. It's Monday. It's 1 o'clock, so it's time for Perkei Avot History and Hashkafa, sponsored by the Tel Aviv International Synagogue, under the inspired leadership of Rabbi Ariel Constantine. We're facing something of a unusual situation in this week's class. And that is that the Mishnah that we are slated to discuss is, on the one hand, extremely short, and on the other hand, I don't think we're going to finish it today. There's a lot to say. There is a phenomenon in general rabbinic literature that the shorter the text, the shorter the words that we are bidden to explain, the more time, more energy, and the more words are required to flesh out and to put these things in proper perspective. I encountered this a few times in my life, but in two cases that are very, very striking. I always remember that Rav Soloveitchik Zecher Tzadik Levracha, my beloved master and teacher, would spend the most time and get the most mileage out of very short, almost gnomic comments of the Tosafists on the Talmud. Which, if you had a long comment of the Tosafists, so that would take like boom, 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 you finish. However, if there was a short one, that was like, forget it, that was going to be a lot of work. Something similarly has come across my desk in the past few weeks. Over the past month or so, I think, the Steinsaltz Center, led by my friend Rabbi Menny Steinsaltz, has been sending out drafts of the lectures of the Shiurim of his father, Rabbi Din Steinsaltz itself, on the Likutei Torah, on the Parsha comments of the Alter Rebbe, of the Baal HaTanya, Rabbi Schneur Zalman of Ladi. And I can't help, each of these little pamphlets, and you should try to get them because they're really wonderful, but each of these pamphlets, when I print them out, because they come by WhatsApp, when they come, they end up being like 20 pages long. And when you look at it, I know I don't have one here, it's usually one line, and then one line of text of the Baal HaTanya, and then like two pages of comments by Rabbi Steinsaltz. So it's a similar kind of thing. So this Mishnah that we're about to embark upon is actually an example of that same kind of phenomenon. So what is the Mishnah? The Mishnah is in the second chapter of Pirkei Avot. It is Mishnah 9, and it reads as follows. Now, in the printed versions, in many of the printed versions, it says Rabbi Yoezer says, but the proper version, based on the manuscript, on the Kaufman manuscript, which is the most accurate version of the Mishnah, the oldest and most accurate manuscript of the Mishnah, has it Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yosef, for Rabbi Yossi, who is one of the students of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who we've been discussing, he was a Kohen. He says, he used to say as follows: Yihi mamon chavircha chaviv alecha kishelach. Your friend's possessions should be as dear to you and of great concern to you as your own. That's statement number one. Statement number two, Hatken atzmecha lilmod Torah, prepare yourself always to study Torah because it requires effort. We talked about the Gnomic Mishnah. It requires effort. She'eni Yerushalach. It's not you don't get it because you're born Jewish. You have to work for it. You have to earn it. No such thing as having Torah and not earning it. As the Gemara says in Megillah, if somebody says, Lo yagati umatzati, if I didn't look for it, I didn't work hard, didn't expend any energy, I didn't put any effort, I didn't sacrifice anything to find, to be able to gain a Torah education, to be able to become an educated person, or in anything, they don't believe it. Nobody achieves anything without paying some kind of price and investing something. And the truth of the matter is, if you get something which you don't work for, one could argue that it's of less value. And everything you do should be for the sake of heaven. All right, these are three separate statements. I would like to concentrate today only on the first one. Yehi mamon chavercha chaviv alecha kishalach. Let your fellows, let your friends' possessions be as valuable to you as your own. Now, there's a lot to, I don't like this expression, but that's the word. There's a lot to unpack here. So number one, why emphasize the question, why did Rabbi Yossi HaKohen frame it as your friend's possessions? Why don't you say, we had a previous Mishnah that said, Yehi kavod chavercha chaviv alecha kishalach. The dignity, the personhood of your friend should be as dear to you as your own. So why possessions? That's number one. Question number two is, is there anything unique about this? In general, all of these statements, this one here, or the one I just mentioned, or the famous statement of Rabbi Akiva, which we haven't even gotten to yet, that v'haftel re'acha kamocha is that klal gadol shabbat Torah. You should love your neighbor as yourself. This is a great principle in the Torah, which speaks to the famous negative formulation of the golden rule. The golden rule is not uniquely Jewish. You find it in every major civilization has some variation of it. But usually it's be as nice to other people as you would be to yourself. Whereas Hillel says, whatever you don't like, don't do to somebody else. It's a negative formulation, which by itself is interesting. So, you know, what is it about it? Is there anything specifically Jewish or anything unique here that requires our attention? I'd like to start by focusing in only on Rabbi Yossi's version, because otherwise we'll never get past this Mishnah. Let your friend's possessions be as beloved or precious to you as your own. Now, there is an element of respect here. There is an element of boundaries here that I respect somebody else's possessions, and I don't. I'm good with boundaries. You know, before I go into his house, I knock on the door. When you knock on the door, that's just a matter of like open the door. It's a matter of you're asking permission because you're not supposed to be there. Now, there is a very profound truth in all of that, and that is that a person's domain, a person's, we call it, say, Dalet Amos, is four cubits. A person's domain is an extension of himself. The area, our homes, not so much as our castle, but we choose to live in a certain, generally, if we have the opportunity, we choose to live in a certain place. We choose to live a certain way. We choose to decorate our homes a certain way because they are expressions of who we are. When I was a kid, I used to say, you are what you eat, but it really is the other, but in Judaism, it's the other way around. What you have is really an expression of outside, an external projection of who you are. There's a very profound, interesting statement of Maimonides at the end of the Laws of Theft, in which Maimonides says that if you steal from somebody, you're not just violating them their property. You're violating them their persona, to the extent he says that there's an element of because there's an element of murder when you steal from another person, because you're basically taking something which is an expression of that person, because you generally don't buy things that don't speak to you. I mean, some people I guess do, but most people don't. If you steal from them, you're actually attacking them, their thing per se. By the way, that happens in a lot of situations in which you have intercultural wars or conflicts where the two sides will not only try to get at their enemies, but will also try to attack or also try to hurt the possessions or the symbols of the other side. Because they know that that's as if you're touching the, you know, you're that's another way of getting at the burning flags, burning down sacred places, I mean, say that yesterday was, I don't mean to get political here, but this is actually going to be a political, I can't not get political today, and we'll see in a minute why. There were a couple of attacks against the Tomb of Joseph in Nablus, that Shechem yesterday in Israel. And it's clear that one of the reasons why that's being done by those people is they're trying to attack, trying to get at what Joseph stands for, which is, I find very hard to understand, for the simple reason that Yusuf is a Muslim saint as much as he's a hero of the Hebrew Bible. So how that works, I have no idea. But the point is, the reason why you go at it is because you want to, because Joseph's tomb in this case is an extension or a reflection or an expansion or a projection. That's the word I've been looking for. Projection of Judaism and the Jewish people. So that Yehi Mamon Chavercha Chaviv Alecha Kishalach, be as deferential and as respectful of somebody else's possessions. Not because, it's not just legal, it's a matter of because a person's possessions are an extension of the individual. Now, this is where it gets tricky. That also seems to indicate that I have my things and you have your things. Now, that doesn't mean you shouldn't help other people, because the Gemara, the Mishnah, is going to say later that if I say mine is yours, that's the sodomites. That's a very bad way of looking at society, saying, you know, if I'm not going to care about you, you're not going to care about me. No, you're supposed to care about other people, but you're supposed to be respectful at the same time. Which means that I have a right to the integrity of my possessions, and I have the integrity of the right of my things and your things. And in fact, because I understand why my possessions and my honor and my persona have to be protected, I should realize that put myself in another person's place, and if my friend is being hurt, then I should realize what that would be like if that would happen to me, and try to help them as well. Now, as I said, this is where it gets sticky. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who was Rabbi Yossi HaKohen's teacher, in the Mishnah, a couple of Mishnayot ago, when he sort of characterizes each one of the students, he says that Rabbi Yossi, if I had to characterize him, tell you, who is Rabbi Yossi? Who is this person? Who is he? Who is he? How can I get across to you who this person is? So the answer is, he was a Hasid. Oh. What does that mean? What's a Hasid? So a Hasid, there is all the world of difference in the world between a Hasid and a Chassid. Now, it sounds like it's the same thing, but it's not. The original meaning of the word Hasid is somebody who always seeks to do more than God desires, than God demands, always seeks to do more than the Torah demands, always seeks to go beyond himself, to go the extra mile, because what the Torah actually tells him to do or not do is actually doesn't fill him up. He feels that there's more than he or she can actually do. Being a Hasid comes from the depths of a person's spiritual aspirations. It's like chesed. Chesed comes from deep, deep, deep down inside, inside you. There's a difference, for example, between gemilut chesedim and tzedakah. Tzedakah, you give a couple of bucks, you use your credit card. I don't know what goes on in Chutz Laaretz anymore, but I know that here in Israel, giving tzedakah is no big deal. I mean, the opportunities are all the time. There are people in the street, and if you don't go out of your house because of corona, they'll call you and they'll ask you for tzedakah. It doesn't end. But all you have to do is, you know, give your credit card number, and assuming that you make sure that it's a legitimate tzedakah, there are not such legitimate phone calls also. But, and you give it, and that's finished. You don't feel it. Chesed is something that you have to actually do with your own two hands. Chesed is something where you give totally. It's physical giving, it's emotional identification, it's empathizing, it's sympathizing. Therefore, so tzedakah, you just give cash. But chesed is feeding those that are hungry, literally feeding them, clothing those that are naked, accompanying people who are going to a levaya and accompanying somebody who unfortunately died, and comforting the mourners. That's something you give of yourself. It comes from the deepest recesses of a person's soul. That's chesed. So a chassid is a person who, following the deepest recesses of the soul, wants to do more, wants to maximize, go way beyond. He wants to live, to use the jargon, lifnim mishurat hadin, way beyond what the Torah might demand. That's a chassid. And the examples of chassidim you find in Talmud, and you find in medieval Hebrew literature, are always people who do more, that the halacha says X, and they do more. So one of the famous examples today, shout out to my friend Rabbi Reuven Smalter with his Mishnah project, but today they started started the new cycle of daily Mishnah, two Mishnayot a day, and I think he finished the whole Mishnah in 5.5 years, which is a major achievement. One of the Mishnayot in the fifth chapter in Brachot, the first Mishnah actually, says that before you pray, you should sort of detach from the outside world. You should sort of get yourself in a spiritual and emotional stance to be able to pray properly. Meditate if you wish for a little bit, and then make sure once you're in a state of what's called Kovid Rosh, of seriousness or of appropriate attitude, then you can start praying. Then the Mishnah says, Chassidim Arishonim, the earlier pious ones, the Chassidim, they used to do way more than that. You know, it wasn't 5 minutes of singing a niggun. This was, they would sit there for hours and prepare themselves, and they would get so enraptured in their prayer that it would take them hours to come down. This was a whole to-do, way beyond what the Torah itself demanded. So that's a Chassid. In the Middle Ages in Germany, you had the Hasidei Ashkenaz, the pious of Germany, also same deal. They used to trade, the Torah says X, and they have to do X plus. A chassid is the opposite. A chassid, in the terms of the chassidut that was founded by the Baal Shem Tov and by his excuse me, disciples and the disciples' disciples and so on, it signifies a totally different type of piety. A chassid is a person, whereas a chassid is a person who is totally autonomous, a person who follows the dictates of their own heart. The chassid is a person who is totally dependent upon a master and depends on the Rebbe. And the Rebbe will teach them how to go, because they don't know how to function on their, they don't have the kind of insight the Rebbe has. So it's totally, so in other words, how you recite, how you pronounce the word, chassid or chassid, will depend on what your spiritual posture will be, of either one of dependence upon a master or basically autonomy and independence. In any event, it's clear, since that new version of the word chassid is only from the 18th century, so it's very clear that when Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai called Rabbi Yossi Kohen, his student, a chassid, he meant the first type. So you go beyond what the Torah demands. So why is that a wrinkle? We'll come back to the Mishnah. Very simply, because we, respecting somebody else's property, as I said, also means you have a right to your property. You have a right to your life. And that raises, almost inevitably, the question of, okay, do I sacrifice myself for somebody else? So it's interesting. Most people I know, when they first see this mission, say, well, you know, keep away from the other person, but it can work the other way as well. To what degree or when, under what circumstances, do I, if ever, have to sacrifice myself and my things for somebody else? So here, clearly, on the one hand, there's a mitzvah of giving. I'm not innovating anything here. Obviously, I have to give. There's a mitzvah of chesed, milas chasadim, mitzvah of tzedakah. But is there a limit? So here, I actually hadn't thought of this, but I'm grateful to my friend Professor Zev Safrai in his. In his commentary on the Mishnah, which I think he wrote together with his father, Professor Shmuel Safrai, quotes Gemara in I think it's an Avot de Rabbi Natan. It's a Sifra. Okay. It's a statement in the Halachic Midrash, the Sifra, but it also appears in the Gemara in Bava Metzia. On the Pasuk of Chei Achicha Imach, that your friend should, your brother should live with you, whatever, should live together well. What does that mean? What does the Imach mean? What does it mean with you? Your fellow man should live with you. Zed Darash ben Petori, some guy named Petori who we don't know who it is. Shnaim Shehu Holchim Bamidbar, two people in the desert, famous story. Ve'ein Biyarechad Ela Kiton Shalmaim, and between the two of them, they only have one canteen. Im Shoteo Echad Megilei Shuv, if one person drinks it, then that person will make it out of the desert and will survive. Im Shotim Oto Shnaim, if both of them drink, there isn't enough and they'll both die. Shnehem Metim, they'll both die. Darash Ben Petiri, that's the other version. So this Ben Petiri, the son of Petiri, said, Yishtu Shtehen V'yamutu. Let them both die. One shouldn't die, live on the expense of the other. They should both die. Shneamar V'chei Achicha Imach. When you live, you should only live so long as the other person is living. And you have to choose. Better you should both die. Amar lo Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva responded to him and said, V'chei achicha imach. The point of departure is your friend should live, your brother should live with you. But you come first. Chayecha kodmim l'chayecha vercha. Your life comes first. If you're the one with the water, you drink the water. Now, this is a lot of people find this very jarring. And lots of ink has been spilled over this passage. There have been even those who have argued. It's interesting. It occurred to me. I didn't have a chance this morning to check out where the scholarship on this is right now. But it happens to be there are those who argue that this Ben Petiri or Ben Peturi or Ben Petiri is a corruption of Peter. In other words, that this is a that Rabbi Akiva here was engaged in a debate with a Christian, somebody who had followed the ways of Peter, Petrus, right? And you have this idea in Christianity that, you know, one should die for the would die to save the other person. The whole call of Christianity is based on that. The point, however, is that if you look carefully at the Mishnah, our Mishnah says that, you know, Imach. It never says, you know, look out for that guy's stuff, but you have a right to take care of yourself as well. And you don't have to fall on your sword for somebody else. Now, there are people who, in order to save a million people, will sacrifice themselves. And we have the case that we have a couple of famous cases in Israel, the case of Roy Klein, Hashem Yikom Damo, who was caught with his. With his soldiers in southern Lebanon, the Second Lebanon War, and a hand grenade was thrown into the position that they were occupying, and he screamed Shema Yisrael, threw himself on the hand grenade and to save the rest of his soldiers, which he ended up doing. So there is total self concern is not a value either, but there is this idea that. Nevertheless, that's an extraordinary act of piety. So it's interesting. So Dafka, the person, specifically the person who was known as extraordinarily pious, namely Rabbi Yossi HaKohen, he says everybody has a right to their own, to the integrity of their own being and their own people and their own possessions. So it means being respectful not only to the other person but being respectful to yourself. It's interesting, I don't want to be political, but I'm watching on my feed on social media the last 2 days exactly this kind of argument around the passing of Nobel Prize winner Desmond Tutu, because there are those who are appropriately eulogizing him. On the other hand, he was not a friend of the Jewish people. And the question is, how far does one go with this? So this the tension that you find in this Mishnah is a permanent tension in terms of how one relates to society, how one relates to, how one relates to another person, how one relates to society, and how a group of individuals should relate, which has its own integrity and its own concerns, relates to the broad, to the larger good. It's a very sticky and very complicated question. It is nevertheless true that the idea of self-immolation for the sake of mankind is not a Jewish value. That comes from another religion, and it's not really the Jewish thing. And you see it again in this Mishnah, where in principle, per individual's integrity is as important as the other person's, and that means mutual respect and interaction. Okay, so I think that's it for today. Next time we will continue with this Mishnah. And as always, I invite you, please, this will be posted, as you can see, it's posted on my Facebook page and on the Tel Aviv International Synagogue Facebook page, and it will be posted on my YouTube channel, and et cetera, et cetera. Please share it. I mean, I'd like to get responses, and people are welcome to criticize me too, and that's how you learn. Because if you make mistakes, then you learn and you grow, and you don't get bored, and you don't get boring, and that's the nature of life. It's the nature of the educational gesture. Be well, enjoy. We will see you in 2022. See you then. Bye.